Call this meeting of the assembly to order. Want to welcome everybody who's here and to members from the public and to members of the assembly. Good morning to all. We have 154 of our 161 members today. As Margaret Anderson has a son in California getting married. Claude Armstrong, regrettably, has a death in the family. Caroline Fader is recovering from surgery and wants to say that she misses being with us very much. And CJ and Susan, their jobs have taken them elsewhere. And Sylvia and Glenn, of course, are still on leave looking after their spouses. In the audience, we have some, not everybody special, guests today that have not been introduced previously. Andrew Davies, who's Senior Departmental Assistant to the Honorable Maurice Belanger, Office of the Deputy Leader of the Government and Minister Responsible for Democratic Reform. Good to have you here with us today. Harry Neufeld, Chief Electoral Officer, Elections BC. And Janet Erasmus, Senior Member of the Legislative Council Group, Attorney General's Office. Good to have all of you here today. Now, a number of, as we come into decision time, a number of members have just reminded me or asked me again this morning whether when they are making decisions over the course of the next three meetings, they are representing their constituency, that is from Vancouver South or whatever, or are they here as members? The answer that we had discussed before is that members were chosen by riding, by electoral district, to ensure that there was a geographical representation of members. Once those members are selected, you represent British Columbians, and you represent yourself. You talk to people in your community. You learn from our great master teachers, Campbell and Ken, particularly Campbell, of course. And we learn from the presentations, and we learn from the hearings. We are in our discussion groups again. But in the end, it's your mind, your heart, your values. That's what makes the decisions. Do we have agreement on that? That where we're at? Good. Now, just before we turn to Michael Fogel, I want to tell you about, I was in the Kelowna yesterday giving a presentation on what we're doing to the Union of BC Municipalities, and I was telling them how wonderful you all are. And one of the reasons why we're so cohesive and everything else, I gave them several reasons. I ended up finally saying, and also what's terribly important is gender balance, that we've got 60 males and 60 females. And then I got off the stage, and this one very concerned woman approached me and says, "You've got 60 men and 60 women. What are the others?" I also mentioned right at the very beginning that this government, Legislative Assembly, when they created the Citizens Assembly, they talked about selecting 160 ordinary British Columbians. And while that initial list might have been such, the means by which they have chosen to select and then pre-select the selection process, the complete and unlimited freedom which the government has given the Assembly, and we have been given absolutely full and unlimited freedom by the government. The importance of the task which they have given us. And the fact that we are not a consultative group, but the fact is we actually have power, if we wish to, if that's our wisdom in the end, to make a recommendation that goes directly to the people of BC, have transformed 160 ordinary British Columbians into 160 very extraordinary British Columbians. And I'm telling you, it's a good thing, because we are in decision time. And this weekend, and the next weekend, and the following weekend are very, very big decisions for the Assembly. And the weekend of October 22 and 23, of course, is when we make a really critical decision. But they start today. So we're looking forward to that extraordinary and, of course, that responsible effort that everybody expects from this group. Now, to help us get going, in our discussions and working with each other, and although everybody agrees, I think we have done an absolutely admirable job, we're not going to rest on those laurels. We're not going to take anything for granted. We've asked Michael Fogel to be with us this morning to help us through and talk about getting to yes, about how we can most effectively work together. Michael has a Bachelor of Law degree. He's got a Doctor of Jurisprudence. He's got a Master's degree in Adult Education. He's a mediator, a facilitator, conflict resolution educator. He has worked for the private sector. He has worked for the universities. He's a senior lecturer at the Justice Institute. And I've told him, with all this kind of reputation he brings today, he's got a chance to prove he's every bit as good as everybody says he is. Michael, welcome to heaven.
Good morning. Jack took the words out of my mouth as he was saying, ordinary British Columbians. I was thinking about what an extraordinary group you've become, at least according to everything I've read. So it's a real pleasure to be here and spend some time with you. So conflict. So apparently there's some of you that are concerned about the potential for or conflict that's already occurring. The good news is that conflict just happens. You get two or more people together in a room, and a good chance that that's what's going to happen, because we've got strongly held opinions about things, right? As human beings, that's kind of part of what we do. My belief is that conflict, generally speaking, is a sign that something's broken, that something needs fixing. It's only how we engage in conflict that's problematic, not conflict of and by itself. So it would be quite unusual, given the next steps that you attempt, that you're going to be attempting to accomplish, for conflict not to occur. You've got strongly held opinions at this point. The good news is that, based on what I've read, what I've heard, all of you have joined together in an extraordinary task and have made a commitment to accomplish that task. So I'm going to ask a question of you. What causes conflict? And certainly you don't have to use the mics. I would imagine that your voices can be heard in here. What are some of the things that cause conflict from your experience? If you just yell it out. Opinions, so strongly held opinions. We're going to talk about what happens when opinions become positions and the role those play in your interactions with each other. What else?
Disagreement.
Okay, so one of the things we've got to do is talk about disagreement. How does that actually relate? Are we really disagreeing, or are we simply not listening to each other, not really hearing each other, and making some assumptions that we disagree? What else? Lack of empathy, lack of understanding. So sometimes a great deal of conflict is caused by the fact, I don't think you understand me, you don't think you understand the other, and so it gets to be sort of a ricochet effect. What else?
Not listening.
So when we have strongly held opinions, usually our inclination is to try and impress others with those opinions. What's interesting about that is that the other is always trying to impress us with theirs. So what often winds up getting lost is the listening, right? Because we're so engaged in trying to influence the other. Let me encourage you for the next several weekends that you're going to be working with each other. This is going to be a process of mutual influence. You're here to influence each other. If I believe for a moment that you are not influenceable by me, you will not stand a chance to influence me. There has to be a mutuality and commitment. And that it requires listening to each other. It requires a commitment you've already made, and that was listening to understand each other. That was one of the first principles, my understanding is, that was one of the first principles that you agreed to listen to understand each other. As the pressure starts to get worse and worse, and it apparently will be, you're going to have a tendency to start to feel that pressure, and you'll have less inclination to listen to understand. And there's nothing more important than that piece. What else?
Ignorance.
So ignorance is probably the same thing as lack of understanding to some degree. I know that when someone is saying something to you that you just, my God, where are they coming from? that makes no sense whatsoever. The truth is, it makes sense to them. Your job will be to try to make sense of it. Your job will try to make sense of it. That's what you owe each other here. Because chances are everyone that says something in this room really believes fairly strongly in what they're saying. So it must come from somewhere. There's another expression that I'm constantly turning to. All behavior makes sense. All behavior makes sense. Even though there are times I feel certain that when you're engaged with each other, you wonder about each other's behavior and wonder how it could possibly make sense. The truth is that the way I view the situation in that moment, what I'm doing and what I'm saying makes sense to me. And your jobs, if you're going to make this work, is to do your level best to help make sense of it for yourselves as well. What else creates conflict? Anger. So we all have our anger points, our flash points, right? As pressure starts to build, your flash points will also be just a little more sensitive as well. So anger gets in the way. We're going to talk a little bit later about anger and the escalation of anger and its effect on your ability to use good judgment. No surprise, the angrier you get, the less inclined you are to use good judgment. Right? That's just what happens. We have it, all our blood goes everywhere else but to our brains when we're angry. We're preparing to defend ourselves when we get angry. So the physiological reality is that we're preparing ourselves to do one of two things, right? Flee or fight. And so it's not going to our brains. It's not allowing us to actually think very effectively. What else causes conflict? Sorry? Conflict of interest. We're going to talk about interests. My belief is that everyone here has a commitment to doing the right thing. You may start to wonder about what's her agenda, what's his agenda, etc. When you get down to interests, which you already have, by the way, you have already gotten down to interests by saying, what do we want to make sure that our electoral system addresses? What do we want to make sure that our goals and objectives are in this electoral system? You've already gotten down to interests. Interests actually do not conflict. Interests do not conflict. They are the building material for your outcomes. If you want fair representation, you want multiple voices, you want all of the many interests that you've talked about, you want proportional representation, and I encourage you to talk more about the definitions of these terms with each other, and I'll mention that a little bit later as well. Those are interests that need to be combined in some kind of combination to come up with an outcome. Those interests do not conflict. Positions conflict. Positions inevitably conflict. Interests are simply the building material. What else? Attitude. More about attitude. I'm sorry, who said that? Attitude meaning?
How you approach someone, your demeanor.
Okay, good. Good. So your demeanors with each other, there's a tremendous amount of research that indicates that when problems don't get solved, when conflicts don't get resolved, that about 88% of the time, the lack of resolution has nothing to do with the substantive nature of the conflict. That about 88% of the time, it's about how we're engaging with each other. It's about how we're treating each other as human beings. How respected do I feel? How well do I feel listened to? Do I have a voice at the table? Am I liked? It goes down to those very human driving elements that we all have. So think about that. 88% of the time, it's not about the outcome. It's not about the substantive nature. 88% of the time, it's about how I feel about how you're engaging with me. Something to think about. What else? Sorry? Control and? Yeah, so pressure. So the whole notion of control is an interesting one as well. We make assumptions about one another. We make assumptions that our behavior indicates certain things, that we're trying to take control, grab control. We want more of the spotlight than everybody else. The truth is, we've learned how to engage with each other over many, many years. Most of us don't even reflect on how we're engaging. We just kind of do what it is we do. So rather than make assumptions about why you each are doing what you're doing, inquire about that. One indicator of someone wanting control is the volume of how much you hear from them. That's sometimes one of the indicators. A caveat I want to send out there to all of you. If you actually want to impress one another with your point of view, if you actually want to influence each other with your point of view, speak minimally. Say what it is that you have to say and get off the mic. We as adults have about a 2-minute attention span. It's true. When we feel like we're being talked at about the 2-minute mark maximum, we start to turn off. Some of you may think about what's happening next week. Some of you start thumbing through papers. Some of you start thinking about what you got to buy at the grocery store tonight. You'll find things. The reality is, about the 2-minute mark, you stop listening. If you are listening at all, you're hearing blah, 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 blah.
Time's up, by the way.
I'm already talking. I'm over my 2-minute mark, right? It's true, which is one of the reasons why I'm engaging you, If I were just to stand up here and talk at you, you have a limited capacity to listen to me. I mean, that's just a reality. So a good problem-solving session is a good conversation. And I think each of us knows what it's like to be engaged in a good conversation, what that actually means. It means balance. It means I feel like I am, in fact, engaged with you in a conversation. You're asking me questions. You're making statements. I'm making statements. We're having a conversation. This needs to be a conversation. And I have no idea. In this room, there are bound to be several of you who are taking more than 2 minutes when you're speaking. That's it. No. Well, then you are an extraordinary group of people. So become more self-monitoring. In the next few weekends, it's going to be essential. Become more self-monitoring. Because you don't want to lose your audience. Whether you're in small groups, whether you're in large groups, be wary of speaking too long. If you want to have impact, be clear about what it is you want to say. Say it and move on. I'm talking about to serve yourself. If you really want to impress people in this room, if you really want to make a difference in this room, if you really want to influence people in this room, time yourself. 2 minutes is a long time to simply listen to somebody. What else? Pride. So each of you at this point has a certain amount of investment already in possibly an outcome already. And what happens when you get an investment in something, you start to become attached to it. And letting go of it in any way, shape, or form usually involves loss of face, pride, all kinds of stuff that we've got going on here. Be wary of too prematurely becoming attached to a particular outcome. The moment that I believe you're attached to an outcome, you facilitate my becoming just as attached to another one. That's what position taking is all about. The moment I believe that you're taking a position, and if I'm not really right on board with you, my inclination will be to find a counterposition. And once we're dug into our positions, you know what that's like. So conflict will almost inevitably arise out of position taking. And the good news is you haven't, well, my experience so far, what I've heard so far, and what I've read so far is there hasn't been a great deal of position taking. That you've really been listening to each other. There's been a lot of agreement on foundational principles that you want to incorporate in a future electoral system. So it feels to me, it seems to me, from an outsider's perspective, that there hasn't been a lot of position taking. That's the good news. Silence and body language. So what role can that play? Well, in the end, in large group, that's a tough one, right? Because you've got limited time, and the expectation is that you're going to fill in that time hearing and listening to each other. Reflective time is helpful. That silent time can be helpful, certainly. How much you read into each other's body language, you've got to be careful of. Some of us have been overly exposed to pop psychology, I think. And so we wind up, how many times have you, this one, right? What assumptions do you have about this one? Well, sometimes, you know, people just like to sit like this. Have you ever noticed that? Yeah, right. Jack says he does. It's a very interesting thing. Don't jump to conclusions. Don't make assumptions about each other too readily. One thing I really, really want to emphasize in the work you do, remain curious and non-judgmental. Remain curious and non-judgmental. We were talking earlier. Sometimes we adults become experts a little too quickly in our lives. I've watched children until they enter some kind of an institutionalized learning environment. They're so curious, aren't they? They're serial open-ended questioners. And what I mean by that is what, when, how, why, who, right? Open-ended, curiosity-oriented questions. Children are so good at it until they walk into a schoolroom where then it becomes all about the answers. Remain curious with each other. Remain as non-judgmental with each other as you possibly can for the next few weeks. The moment I feel judged by you, I start to edit what I have to say. The spontaneity goes down in direct proportion to how judged I feel. And you've really got to maintain some continuing spontaneity here. The open-mindedness that you agree to in the beginning. Understand that the moment I feel judged by you, I'm going to start editing everything I have to say. And in turn, I'm going to judge you. And that's going to put a quick stop to the kind of open, candid conversation that you really need to continue to have here. So conversation. I mentioned conversation. By the way, my apologies. Supposedly communication is my thing, and I don't think I communicated very well. So you're going to have to share. Do you see those relatively large packages of material that you've got? So if everyone would turn to that, I'd appreciate it. You're going to have to share a little bit here. I want you to take a look at page 4 of that. Everybody got the one I'm referring to? Great. There are a few words on conversation that are on page 4. I found it interesting. Conversation comes from Latin roots, which mean to turn with. I'd like you to think about that a minute. To turn with. If you and I are engaged in a good conversation with each other, there is the potential that we can turn with each other. That at the end of that conversation, we can leave a slightly changed person by virtue of what we heard in that conversation. Conversation can have a tremendous impact if we allow it to have an impact. A good conversation involves the kind of listening to understand that we've already been talking about and that you've already agreed to do with each other. What gets in the way of your ability to listen to each other with that kind of intention? What gets in the way of your ability to listen with the intention to understand?
You're not saying what I
want to hear. Right? In the first few pages of this, there's a wonderful expression here. This is on page 3. Every error under the sun seems to arise from thinking that you are right yourself because you are yourself. And other people are wrong because they're not you. Interesting, huh? A lot of truth in that one. So it's hard for me to listen and understand when you're saying stuff either I don't want to hear or I don't agree with. Understand that we've got built-in fairness barometers. If I believe for a moment that you're not listening to me and that you have no intention of listening to me, what's my chances of What are your chances of listening to me back? If I believe for a moment that you have no intention of listening to me to understand what's going to happen in return, same thing. If I get that you are willing to listen to me in order to understand, I will in turn do my level best to listen with the same intention. That's generally true of all of us. Generally true of all of us. And it seems to me like that's what you've already been engaging in doing. At least that's what I'm hearing for the most part. So there are a couple of things on there about conversation. I'm going to leave those for your own reading. The very last part, Zeldin points the way home. Conversation is a meeting of minds with different memories and different habits. When minds meet, they do not exchange facts. They transform them and reshape them. Conversation just doesn't reshuffle the cards. It creates new cards. That's the potential. Seems to me like that's generally what you're here to do. So, turning to page 5, dynamics of conflict. An interesting page for you to think about. These are all of the elements that go into the stew of conflict. Behavior, time demand, setting, value, stress, expectations, emotions, power. So every time any one of these elements seems to be contributing to negative experiences, you need to step back and take a look at what can you change. Is it behaviors? Let's change behaviors. If it's how we're engaging with each other, let's change that. So it becomes incumbent upon you to step back periodically and see what's contributing to this stew. Everybody knows when something's not working. Each of you in your own way has become a leader. You become a leader in your own way. This is a group of leaders. So when you're in small group, when you're in large group, when you're experiencing something not working, don't just continue in that experience. It's that whole notion of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Hello? I don't think that's going to happen, right? So if you're experiencing something not working, somebody's got to say, hold it, not working, and make an adjustment where an adjustment's necessary. Don't just let it take on a life of its own. Looking at the next page, conflict cycle. Here's the good news and the bad news. Each of you already has a pretty strongly held set of beliefs and attitudes about conflict. It got established pretty much at the age of 4. Isn't that interesting? Pretty much at the age of 4, you had some pretty strongly, began holding on pretty strongly to some beliefs and attitudes about conflict. They haven't changed a great deal since then. And so right now what happens is conflict occurs, there's a reaction to it by someone, by you, and what happens is there's a consequence, and that consequence, generally speaking, reinforces our original belief and attitude about conflict. It's called a pattern. We all have them, right? We all have lots of patterns in our lives. Why do we keep them? Any idea why we keep patterns in our lives? Safe, familiar, and we get to be right. Isn't that amazing? It's amazing the lengths we go to be right, right? They're familiar, and we get to be right. So when you find yourself in conflict here, if you do, I'm not assuming you will be, if you do, then in the end, be careful that you don't move into reaction. Do your best to respond differently and see if the consequence might be different and it might not necessarily reinforce your original belief and attitude about conflict. Resolution of conflict can, in fact, lead to very positive understanding and very positive outcomes. Don't let the fear of conflict paralyze you. If there are those in this room that believe, well, the pressure's on now. Yeah, it is. That's a reality. The pressure's on now. In the last, 2 weeks, there have been articles and articles about the work you're doing. Absolutely. The pressure is on. Don't let the fear of conflict, though, paralyze you. Don't let the fear of conflict keep you from saying what it is you need to say. Well, there may be lots of reasons why you're getting a lot of silence. You've been working together for a relatively long period of time. What happens in a group of five or a group of 105 is that some family dynamics start to set in. You start to create a very, very large family. So think about Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners. You know, you're used to certain people getting more airtime than others, and some of you get kind of discouraged, and you wind up, well, you know what? Nobody wants to hear from me. I don't really have much to add. And eventually it becomes a pattern. It becomes a pattern. And I think you really got to be careful. My belief is every single one of you in this room has something to contribute, and not contributing later, I think you're going to feel really bad about. And so now is the time to step up to the plate and be heard. It is the time. If it's in small groups that you feel more comfortable speaking, fine. Do it in the small groups. Some of you are reluctant to speak in a group. I would be reluctant to speak in a, except for the fact that I got the mic and I'm standing up here in front of you. But the truth is, unless you feel absolutely invited, right, to speak in a group this size, there's a certain amount of awkwardness associated with doing that. My belief is you have invited each other to speak. I think that's a given, that you have, in fact, invited each other to speak. Accept the invitation. Accept the invitation. Each of you has something to contribute. You know that. You know that. So, moving along. There are several pages here on positions and interests. And I want to talk with you about positions and interests. If I can just get this going here. Oh, good. Well, not quite yet. We're going to talk about Anger Mountain. I told you I'd want to talk about that, so let's talk about that. Anger Mountain. So each of you has your own buttons and triggers. Most of you had those buttons and triggers, particularly the buttons, placed in your system beginning about, again, the age of four, developed to about the age of 10. Those buttons and triggers have been in place ever since. Now, what happens when you get triggered is there's an escalation response right up Anger Mountain. When you get to the top of the mountain, you got crisis. What happens at crisis? Fight or flight. Now, fight doesn't look, I'm sure no one's gotten physical in the room as yet, right? Not yet. So it rarely, in circumstances like this, gets physical, but what it does look like is raised voices, red faces, all of the nonverbal stuff that you know people are getting angry about, right? So there's this escalation, and you notice the quality of judgment goes down in direct proportion to the escalation of anger. It's not rocket science. Everybody knows that. You can't think straight when you're getting that triggered, when you're getting that angry, ultimately. So what each of you has to take responsibility for is self-management, first of all. That's the first place, the first point of intervention here is self-management. If you feel that going on, you've got to self-manage. Each of you does that in your own way. You also have to take some responsibility for ensuring that that doesn't happen in the room as much as possible as well. And we're going to talk about some ways of doing that. But understand that there's also, you see that ridiculous little thing near the top of the mountain? It's become sort of a Rorschach test. No one knows exactly what that is. It's actually meant to be a little cabin near the top of the mountain. And that's supposed to be smoke coming out of the chimney. Okay, all right. I'm not great with the software. Okay. So understand that the reason that's there is because most of us, how many people meditate in the room? Really? That's impressive. That really is impressive. So the meditators in the room may stand a better chance of being a little closer to the bottom of the mountain than most of us. The reality is most of us live a little closer to the top of the mountain. And what I mean by that is our triggers, once we are triggered, it's not a long climb to the top. Get it? So what winds up happening is I get triggered when I'm feeling stressed, and you as a group are going to start feeling pretty stressed. So if I'm stressed and feeling under a lot of pressure and I get triggered, it's pretty much a matter of opening the door, hooking a right, and I'm up at the top of the mountain. Not a long climb. It's not the grouse grind here. You are up there. So pay attention to that as well, that it won't take people long to get angry when they're feeling stressed and under a lot of time pressure. Pay attention. Pay attention. It's really an important part of this. Any questions about that? Pretty straightforward. Okay, this is what I'd like you to do with each other. We're going to do an exercise with each other before I start talking too much about. This is, I stop talking at you and you start doing something with each other. So here's the deal. Let me define very quickly a position. A position is a solution you have to an identified problem. Right? It's a solution to an identified problem. It's action-oriented. And it addresses a particular problem. Generally, example, let's decide on where we go on vacation. I want to go to Hawaii. I want to go to Alaska. Hawaii, Alaska, positions. You notice that we rarely get, when we start taking positions, that we rarely get to the underlying interests. So what I'd like you to do is this. I'd like you to write down a position you have about something. I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to do this. I'd like you to write down, most of you have about 100 of them at the moment. Pick one, okay? Now, here's the deal. You have to be prepared, though. Don't make it so private that you don't want to talk about it, because you have to be prepared to answer some questions by someone sitting either to your right or left. And probably most of these people you've gotten to know fairly well by now. Do you sit in the same places every time? Oh, okay. Almost. Comfort, huh? Comfort, okay. That may be an interesting thing to start doing now, is to shuffle the deck. That might be a very interesting thing to do, is to shuffle the deck where you're sitting for the rest of the time you're working with these. Just a thought. Okay, so write down a position. A position can be either negatively framed or positively framed. Meaning, I'm absolutely going to make sure that I blank in 2 weeks. I'm going to make sure that I never blank again. It's action-oriented, and it addresses a particular problem. Don't get philosophical here. Don't get philosophical. That's too safe. It needs to have something to do with you and a problem either in your work life or your personal life. You probably don't want to make it too personal. Okay, write it down very quickly if you would. Once you've written it, don't worry. You can tear it up and burn it. It's not as if we're not going to take them up or anything. I'm buying myself a new BMW motorcycle. And so there. And that's my position. It can be that simple. It's action-oriented. Actually, it's an interesting position for me to take. I'll have to think about that one. It's action-oriented, outcome-oriented. That's all. Action-oriented, outcome-oriented. It's a solution to an identified problem. I don't know what my problem is, but a new BMW bike doesn't sound like a bad solution. Right. I need to get out more. Right, exactly. Okay, about 10 more seconds. Yeah, right. I don't have enough to do with my money. All right, here's what I want you to do. There's the exercise right up there. You're going to partner up. So look to your right or left. Pick a partner. You're going to partner up. A is going to state her or his position. B is going to ask three successive questions. Now, let me encourage you here for just a second. You may hear a position that you already have a thought about. You have a perspective on. That's fine. What I want you to do, though, as the other partner, is ask three open-ended questions. Let me tell you what I mean by open-ended questions. They're the questions that come from curiosity. Try to think back when you were a kid. Okay, remember that little furrowed brow once in a while you get when you're going, what's up with that? You remember that? Okay, I just saw one, a furrowed brow. Okay, so I know you can do it. So get curious, and out of curiosity, you'll ask open-ended questions. Open-ended questions are what, why, who, when, where. Forget the how questions for now. Okay, let's come on back and talk about that for just a minute. So I'd like to talk with you about two experiences that each of you had. Each of you played the questioner, and each of you played the person being questioned. So let's talk about your experience as the questioner. What was it like to be the questioner? What was your experience of being the questioner? Yeah. I love your candor. Hard because you couldn't put your own opinion in. It's tough dedicating yourself to simply asking questions, particularly when you heard a position about which you have something to say, right? Some of you didn't. Some of you probably heard positions that were totally neutral, if we actually ever feel neutral about anything. And some of you did have varying degrees of opinion about the positions you heard. So if you have an opinion, it's really hard first not to say something about that and suspend that in order to ask questions. Yeah, that can be tough. What other experiences?
I learned something new about the person I was talking to.
You learned something new? My God. Don't you hate when that happens? I learned something new. That's the possibility. That's actually the possibility. When you're truly, when your intention, I set your intention to some degree by giving you an exercise. But setting your intention to actually ask questions and listen to the answers, the potential for learning something new arises. Yeah. What else? Yes.
We found common ground that we can both relate
to. Common ground you can both relate to. Yeah, that often happens as well. That out of the experience of asking curiosity-oriented questions and really listening to the answers without embellishing in your head, without judging what you're hearing, just taking it in clearly, you can often find some common ground. Assumptions so get in our way. Making assumptions about the other person, because you've already got history with people in the room. You're already making assumptions about these people. So it's tough to continue to meet and interact with people as if there's a blank slate. And that can be helpful. It's hard, and it can be helpful. What else? Other experiences as the questioner? Yes?
You feel involved.
You feel involved. So a good conversation means I'm involved. A good conversation means I'm actually involved. There's an intimacy associated with having a good conversation. There's a connection that comes with having a conversation with someone. Other experiences as the questioner. Yes. It seemed like a regular conversation because it felt as if you were actually engaged. It sounds as if you became interested. That's right. Yeah, so interestingly enough, if we actually engage our curiosity muscle, which for some of us has atrophied to some degree, if we actually engage our curiosity muscle, then we become interested. We actually kind of treat things as interesting, right? Other experiences, yes?
It reminds me of my responsibility because when I'm making my decision and she was so curious about what I'm doing this fall, I said I want to go on holiday, I want to go to Hawaii or to Alaska.
Right.
And it said, won't you forget something? We are the citizen assembly in our community.
Right. So sometimes in stating a position and being open to having people ask questions, what you start to do is test the reality of your own position. We'll get back to that in just a minute. But that's also sometimes what happens. If we don't have somebody going, well, wait a minute, you haven't thought about this and you better straighten up. If somebody's just asking us questions about our positions, it allows us to actually do some self-exploration. As well, some of you may have experienced that. So let's put that on hold for just a moment. Any other experiences as the questioner? Oh, it's harder to predict where the conversation's going to go. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So closed questions are meant to... Closed questions are those questions that can be answered by yes or no. And generally speaking, they are, on some level, an attempt to manipulate the conversation. Rarely do we ask closed questions to which we don't already have an answer we want. Right? And so because that's the case, I, on the receiving end of those closed questions, depending upon my relationship to you, conduct my thinking according to what I think the answer is you want. It gets very convoluted. Something as benign as, I've noticed is not so benign in my own life, something as benign as, do you want to go out to dinner tonight? Not so safe. Not so safe. Because where would you like to go out to dinner tonight? A little more open-ended. But
ask them to use their mics because the recording engineer can't pick it up.
Oh, sorry. Use your mics because the recording engineer can't pick it up. I didn't realize that. Thank you. So asking closed questions invites closed answers, yes or no. Open-ended questions, unpredictable. I don't know what I'm going to get. In the work you're doing here, it's all grist for the mill. Ideally, it's all grist for the mill. As you get closer and closer to your decision making, you're going to have to start closing in the net a little bit. But still, you've got enough time to continue exploring with each other. Explore terms with each other. When someone says fair, my hunch is if I took every one of you aside and asked you curiously what fair meant to you in terms of an electoral system, you'd have some different perspectives on that. Proportion, proportionality. Each of you would probably have a slightly different definition of that. So don't settle for just the terms as they are. Get a little more curious about what those terms mean to each of you. There are depths and depths and depths of these interests that you've identified, these principles you've identified. Stay curious about them. Stay curious about them. You don't have to settle, in spite of the fact I know you've heard this, you don't have to settle for compromise. Some of you are going, what the heck is he talking about? Of course we're going to have to compromise. Possibly. But don't set that up as the pinnacle of what you can accomplish here. You may be able to accomplish something more than compromise. If you encompassed all of the goals and objectives, all of the principles into one ball of wax here, that would not be compromise. That would not be compromise. And it is possible if you start defining these terms and these principles more with each other. Any other experiences as the questioner?
Well, myself, I felt very sorry for this man, and I wanted to help him.
Right.
That was the.
So.
That was the rub.
So that's interesting. The more you understood, the more empathy you had for his circumstances, about which we're now all very curious, of course. But we'll let that go. We'll totally let that go. Yes.
I was going to say, with the open-ended questions, you build a lot more rapport.
Rapport. So open-ended questions invite open-ended exploration. You wind up learning more about me. I wind up learning more about me as well. And so closed questions often create defensiveness. Open-ended questions often create connection, much more connection. So what was your experience as the person being questioned? Oh, one more thing. What was your experience of knowing you would have to summarize, or you were being asked to summarize what your partner said? What was your experience? How did that affect your interaction?
It made you listen a lot more intently.
You bet. So paraphrasing or summarizing is a self-test, and you don't want to fail, right? None of us want to fail the test. And so you wind up listening exponentially better. So what I'm going to encourage you to do in your conversations with each other, in this room, in small groups, whatever the formats at coffee, actually probably most of your work happens at coffee breaks and lunches with each other in some respects. Whenever you meet with each other, summarize and paraphrase more what you're hearing. Summarize and paraphrase more of what you're hearing from each other. Seek clarification. Build it into your conversations with each other. And do it more often. What it is, well, I'll get to that in just a minute, but it increases exponentially the potential for better understanding. What was your experience of being the person questioned? Yes?
I felt heard.
You felt heard. Yeah. So the summary or paraphrase is an absolute concrete example of I'm heard. It's that simple. Even if you don't want to, even if there's a part of you going, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to listen to this. Paraphrase it. Summarize it. I feel heard, and you have just increased your chances by about 75% that I will now listen to you. That's just the way we are. That's just the way we are. He listened to me, I'll listen to him. It's that built-in fairness meter that we've got going on. What's also true is this about, and I think this probably happened, at least I think I noticed it happening. I summarize or I paraphrase, I feel heard and understood, and I go deeper. Almost inevitably what winds up happening is, she heard me, here's more. He heard me, here's more. Because it's that connection that you draw with each other. And so without even an invitation with another question, you'll almost get more from that person because it's an invitation to go just a little deeper because of that ability to reflect. Yes?
I felt there was a greater trust.
Trust.
And that it drew me into more of a dialogue that I'm not used to.
Yeah.
In our day-to-day conversations with people.
Exactly.
I felt that he really cared about asking the questions.
Exactly. So when you've got a combination of someone questioning and dedicated to clarifying what it is you're saying, trust gets built. And then you extend yourself more to the other person as well. It's what creates a good conversation. It's that connection. It's rapport that you create with each other.
I noticed in comparing this exercise to a lot of sort of standard patterns of conversation that if you take one component of it out, it's hard to have the other components.
Yes.
For example, if someone takes 5 minutes explaining their position, then you're not necessarily going to be so interested asking them open-handed questions because you're going to think, I finally get a chance to speak, and I'm going to ask them a question. Then they're going to talk for another 10 minutes.
Exactly.
Or checking their position. So when one thing changes, it all changes.
Exactly. So our interactions with each other are very dynamic. And what you do affects me. What I do affects you. What each of you has to become more aware of is that effect you're having on each other. Anybody ever hear the term emotional intelligence? A lot of things being written about it. And the core of it is this. How aware am I, self-aware? How self-aware am I, and am I aware enough to understand the effect you're having on me? The effect that you're having on me so that I can actually express to you that effect so that we can do some changes in our interactions with each other. And how aware am I, and this is really key, how aware am I of the effect I'm having on you? How many of us go through life interacting, and really not having a clue about how all those interactions went, right? Because we really got to be aware of the impact you're having on each other so that if I'm shutting down, if I'm not listening, if I'm interrupting, if my eyes are glazing over or whatever it is, then you know you've lost me and you don't want to lose me because you actually do want to maintain your audience, right? So there needs to be a combination of that awareness of self, how you're being affected by each other, and how you're affecting the other as well. Other experiences as the person being questioned. Yes?
Yeah, I felt I had to sort of question my position.
You bet.
A little bit, yeah.
You bet. So this is what winds up happening. When you are challenged directly by one another, well, that makes no sense whatsoever. Didn't you hear the experts? They said this, that, and the other. What do you wind up doing? you just dig in more, don't you? Isn't that interesting the way that happens? So I really want to influence you, so I'll attack you. Oh, okay, well, that'll work. So what winds up happening is the more our perspective feels attacked, the more we fortify our position. That's all. But if I'm asking you questions about that position, if I'm truly, without judgment, being curious about that position, you will start to reality test your own position. You'll start to really think about it. You'll start to wonder about it. Well, maybe that's not the best way to go here. It's the questions that are key. The moment you attack each other, all you're doing is inviting the other to dig in and fortify and protect, which is exactly what we do. It is absolutely predictable. Other experiences as the person being questioned. Yes.
Knowing what the exercise was and the constraints of the exercise is 5 minutes long for both of us to do it, I felt a responsibility to be concise and anticipate her open-ended questions to have answers ready.
Yay! So it actually became a relatively efficient process, and you really did get out what you needed to get out. But you had to think ahead of time a little bit as well. Yeah, good. Good. Yes.
Surprisingly enough, we had two totally bizarre, diverse statements that we had made, and at the end of the 5 minutes, we were actually both saying the same things.
Isn't that interesting? So what's fascinating about positions are that on their face, they look so polar different. They look so black and white, which is what some of your experiences are right now. But when you start to dig into them, they're not. When you start to actually dig into them and you start to get at the underlying interests, needs, concerns, fears associated with those positions, you start to see the commonalities, the mutualities. There's an interesting, just to focus on the listening piece of it, there's an interesting piece of research that gets validated over and over and over again. We are listening deprived. There is a part of us as human beings that hunger to have someone actually listen to us. That 90% of us feel like we're actually, truly, sincerely, and genuinely being listened to about 10% of the time. So you've got a wonderful opportunity here to quench that thirst that each of you has in terms of not being listened to in the rest of your lives and actually start listening to each other a little bit more in the context of what you're doing here. Any other experiences either from either part that you played that we haven't covered? Yes.
I found it.
I'm hearing a voice. Oh, there we go.
Can
great.
You hear?
Yeah, there you go. Yes, Fred.
I found myself with a little bit of difficulty explaining my position when I was questioned.
Okay. So it sounds as if, though, as you were being questioned, there was a part of you that felt like you had to justify it. Probably. So that's something you want to be careful of, that when you do find yourself taking a position and when someone is asking you questions, you want to be careful as the questioner as well. Make certain that your questions are not intended to push somebody into justification, because that's a defensive posture. And when you start to feel like you have to justify, then all of the interests, all of the needs, all of the concerns that come up will only serve as justifiers for the original position. So it can be a trap. Be careful. One last experience. Yes.
Felt just a very slight degree of nervousness to venture my thing forth. Quickly alleviated, but initially, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So all behavior makes sense, and that includes taking positions. And we take positions, why? Why do we take positions? We do it all the time. Why? Why do we do it? Why does it make sense to take positions? Self-preservation, protection. Here's the thing about positions. They're stable. I can stand on my position and go ahead and try to move me. So to some degree, there's a security in taking positions. We know that position. We can build all kinds of fortification around that position. We learn how to justify that position in all kinds of ways. When people start to ask us questions about that position, the position starts to feel a little shaky. And most of us don't like feeling a little shaky. We like the strength that positions provide us. That's why we take them. That's why we take them. It's just that when it comes to problem solving, they get in our way. They get in our way. Yes?
I think not taking a position is often people are perceived as wishy-washy, yeah. Which can be a negative thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, understand, position taking does feel powerful internally and is almost inevitably experienced externally as some kind of power, which is why we do it. Understand, though, if you're trying to work with each other in some kind of a decision-making process, that position-taking feels like power grab. It feels like a power grab. And then what winds up happening is power struggles. And that won't serve you here. That won't serve you here. At some point in time, you've got to move from conversation and dialogue, which is an ever-widening net. And you've had that experience. You've been really widening the net. You've been purposely not deciding. Well, let's move to this one. No, let's agree on that one. You've purposely been avoiding that in order to talk about what principles do we want addressed? What goals and objectives do we want to make sure that are addressed? What deficits in the present system do we want to make sure are addressed? So you're doing this wonderful net widening work, which is great. At some point in time, you've got to start bringing the net in. That doesn't mean you have to take positions. It just means you do have to start evaluating. And there's an evaluation process you're going to go through. That evaluation process will best be served if you evaluate on the basis of the interests. You evaluate the interests, the goals and objectives that you've identified become your criteria for deciding whether or not this is the best course of action. So when you get down to alternative A or alternative B, whatever those wind up being, assuming that's what you wind up with, you don't want to just clash those and say, well, A is better than B. No, B is better than A. You want to assess A and B based on the criteria, based on the criteria you've agreed upon. So the position, I understand why sometimes you got to take positions. Sometimes I take a position just to get somebody's attention. Right? Just to get someone's attention, I will take a position. Labor management issues are full of that kind of set of circumstances. I'm going to take a position just to get somebody's attention. In the work you're doing, it won't serve you. I don't believe it will serve you. Other comments or questions before we move on to our next piece? Yes, and yes.
What I found on both parts, the questions and the answers, was that we got a lot of unexpected answers that we couldn't anticipate, and it helped make the other person very human, and it created a bond.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's interesting about those surprises is, as the questioner, if you don't have any intention other than just inquire, and as the person being questioned, you're open to the possibilities, all kinds of surprises can come up. Again, it's kind of like being a kid, right? You just discover things you never imagined that you could possibly discover. And Jack.
Michael, does it make a difference, however, how you ask that or state the position? You might want to put a position out on the table to explore, but you say, you know, I'm tending to think I want to do this, but I'm happy to explore it.
Sure, sure.
So there's just not so absolutely 100% in your face certain.
Good point. It's a good point. So, yes, a position ultimately is a solution. I want to explore this solution is a whole other story, right, than simply saying, this is it. This is my bottom line. How many times have we heard that one? This is my bottom line. And the minute you take bottom lines, of course, all you have to do, there's a whole lot of energy spent in trying to dig yourself out of the bottom line. But putting out a position for exploration purposes, whole other story. Whole other intention, actually. And it will be received very differently. Other comments or questions? Yes.
In my practice of life, I've run in that I ask an open-ended or closed question and end up with a counter question.
So let's talk about that for just a minute. So sometimes, and depending upon the question, what the question is, if you receive a question back, particularly a closed question, much of the time in the kind of environment that you're in right now, a closed question much of the time will be an expression of concern. Listen for that question. If I say something like, do you think people in the more underpopulated areas will see that as fair? That's not a question. What is that? You know what that is. Isn't it my expression of my concern that those in underpopulated areas won't see this as fair? Isn't that what that really is? Unfortunately, rather than seeing it for that statement of concern, we see it as a closed question potentially attacking something we've said or that our point of view that we've taken. So instead of doing that, listen for those closed questions and listen for the underlying message of concern and treat it as an expression of concern. Because most of the time, that's what it is. It's just hidden. Because a lot of times, we're not comfortable saying, I'm concerned about. Most of the time, we're not that comfortable saying that straightforwardly. Yes?
Could something like that not be used as a tool in order to open up additional questioning, as opposed to it being a statement of your position? Could that not be an avenue to open up conversation?
I believe almost anything we say to each other can be an avenue to opening up conversation if we treat it in that manner. It requires an intention. I think that it's that simple, I believe. Closed question, open question, position taking, whatever it might be. If our intention is to open up dialogue, open up conversation with each other, I think any interaction that we have with each other has that potential. Yeah. I think it goes back to the very basic. What's my intention? What's my intention? Good. Okay. Positions. We'll review. And this is all in the, this was in the first 15 pages that were emailed to you, and it's also in the package of material. It's my understanding everyone will have at their disposal packages of material as well. We're just a little short this morning. So positions are action-oriented, result-outcome-oriented, solutions that are often self-serving or perceived as self-serving. Limiting, restrictive, dug in, invested in, often conflictual, black or white, yes or no. So they're often polarized in their orientation. Emotional. We feel very emotional about the positions we take. Black and white, inflexible, defended, justified, framed as opposing or in opposition. Positions are often given up in small increments that often feel like giving up parts of our anatomy. Have you ever noticed that? How attached you become to the positions you take. So that's where compromise is inevitable. If you and I have positions and they're the only building material for our outcomes with each other, the only thing we can possibly hope for is compromise. And I want to emphasize something about compromise. Compromise is experienced as lose-lose. When I walk away from the table having compromised, I rarely celebrate that which I left the table with. I am always looking back over my shoulder at what? What I left behind on the table. Isn't that interesting? So I'm not saying that compromise might not be necessary. What I'm saying is don't compromise around this or this position or this position, because then you have to chop off chunks of these positions, which do feel like they start to feel like pieces of your anatomy. Here, let me take that arm. You don't need it. That's sometimes how it feels. Interests can be traded off if necessary. If in the final analysis what you've come up with is a total package that feels like everyone's gained, It is not compromise. It's mutual gains. That's what can happen from an interest-oriented outcome. Positions create barriers to expanded thinking, listening, and understanding the other. The best we can hope for is compromise. Provide limited building material for outcomes. Examples. Go to Thailand on vacation. Buy a truck. Sell the house. Adopt XYZ electoral system for BC. These are positions, unless and until they evolve from a joint understanding of what interests you want addressed by that solution. Interests become those factors that you want your solution to address. So interests answer the following question. When we build, and I've noticed that Jack has used the expression build, when we build an electoral system with each other, what do we want to make sure that electoral system addresses? What concerns of the voters in BC do we want addressed? What interests of the voters of BC do we want addressed? What are our goals and objectives as we build that electoral system? You've been answering those questions. I encourage you to continue answering them. Don't settle for just the top layer. Continue exploring further what some of those terms mean to each of you so that you'll continue increasing your building material for that building. Because the more building material you have, you'll find the potential for more creative options. Interests. The factors, elements, considerations that are important to us. Those things that drive or motivate us to take our positions. Interests are drivers and motivators as well. Needs, concerns, fears, wants, hopes, desires. The multifaceted, diverse building blocks, building material for outcomes, plans, decisions. Interests rarely, if at all, conflict. They simply are. Interests simply are. Provide more material for producing more creative outcomes. Interests answer the question, what do we want our decision or plan, our electoral system to take into consideration or address? Examples, exposure to a different culture. This goes back to our original positions. A vehicle that can accommodate different needs, more room. Adopt an electoral system that provides local representation, proportionality by adding diverse voices to government, more voter choice. These are interests as you've developed them, as you've agreed upon. I sort of did my homework a little bit. Okay. Any comments or questions at this point? I've definitely broken my two-minute rule, haven't I? Yes.
Can't interests conflict, too? I mean, we're talking about proportional representation and constituencies. In some sense, they do conflict.
They won't conflict if you start to get more in-depth in terms of what they mean. So if I assume what proportionality means to you, my assumption will mean that it will look a certain way. So I'm actually projecting a position onto you.
Don't you have to define terms, what proportional representation is?
And that's what I'm encouraging you to do. So understand that even interests, if you assume that I believe an interest can only be met in one particular way, then the way you will start to interpret proportionality is positionally. Proportionality is an interest. I've been teaching courses in interest-based problem solving and negotiation for years. I have yet to actually see anybody point out interests that conflict when they understand the interests. What conflict is my assumption about how you believe that interest will have to be met. And so I start to believe our interests are actually in conflict with each other. My belief is all of the interests that I've heard come out of this room will not conflict as long as you keep them interests and you don't necessarily assume that proportionality means this system and choice means this system. If you don't go there, I don't think you'll find that they conflict. It's a matter of how do we incorporate an electoral system that takes into consideration all of those interests. Is it challenging? You bet. Has it been done before? Maybe not. Maybe not in the way you're doing it. Other comments or questions? Yes.
This is going to sound like a little bit of a strange comment, but
good.
Okay.
Go for it.
Under the positional side of what you were talking about, uh-huh. Since when did all of those, and who decided that those points were negative?
Well, actually, I it's interesting. I must have expressed them as if they were. And the truth is, that's just my experience of what positions are. You may not see those as necessarily negative. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes the only way to get to where you need to get is to polarize. That's just a fact of life sometimes. Sometimes the only way to get to where you need to get is to take strongly held positions. There are lots of things historically we know that, this may get a little political in its orientation, activism by its very nature is positional. Activism by its very nature is positional. If activists didn't take strong positions, whatever their activist perspective is, if they didn't take strong positions about things, they probably would never get the attention that needs to be drawn to particular things. So I'm not suggesting that positions by their very nature are negative. I believe positions by their very nature, given the task you've assigned yourselves, can get in your way. Can get in your way. May not necessarily, but can. So this is a heads up. That's all. Make sense? Okay. Good. Other comments or questions or observations? Okay. Got a little model up here on the overhead. It's called intent, action, and effect. Straight, simple model and has huge implications for our interactions with each other. This will be a kind of a bonus gift for in acknowledging your invitation to join you this morning, because it really is a gift and it's really an important piece to think about. In every interaction, these three elements are always at play. Every interaction, they're always at play. The action can be what is said, done, nonverbally. It's public because everyone that is witness to it or can hear it is witness, and witness either by hearing it or seeing it, therefore it's public. I could have an interaction with Jack at this moment and it would be public in terms of all of you who are interested would have been a witness to our interaction with each other. Now, that's public. When I have an interaction with Jack or I have an interaction with any of you, I have an intention. Most of the time, that intention is not made public. Why? Why would I not make my intention public most of the time? So it's a safer thing to do, right? I'm engaging, but why should I necessarily disclose my intention? There may be some vulnerability associated with expressing intention. Yep. What else? Excuse me? One-on-one. Tell me more. Okay, so if it's just one-on-one, then my intention is private, and in the end, I why should I disclose it? I might disclose it to the person that I'm engaged with, but I might not necessarily want to disclose it to everybody else in the room, for instance. Also, there are assumptions. When I say or do something in relation to you, whether it's a group or individually, I have an assumption built in. And what is that assumption around that intention? That you'll get my intention. It'll be clear. My intention will be clear. So rarely do I express it openly to you. Now we've got the receiver, the effect. The effect is often private, not the reaction. The reaction is often quite public. It's the effect that we often do not disclose. I may react very angrily if the effect is hurtful. I may react very angrily if the effect is discounting my point of view or my perspective. So the reaction is often quite public. It's the effect that's often held private. So what winds up happening is the following set of circumstances. I do or say something in relation to you. You're affected a particular way. And how you're affected becomes your assumption of my intention. Right? Think about it. Happens all the time. Happens all the time. Right? I decide that you and I are working together. You've just been deluged with work. You've just been deluged with work that you weren't expecting. I offer to take a piece of your work home with me over the weekend. We're team players. I offer to take a piece of that work home with me over the weekend. What's my intention? To help, to be generous, to be supportive, to be a good team player. The effect on you might be she thinks I'm incapable. She thinks I can't hold up my weight. She thinks this is a piece of work that I don't have the knowledge to do. A hidden agenda. She wants the credit for doing the work. So I react and I go, oh, it's okay, Barbara. I can handle it. Thank you very much. Got it up. Barbara in her head's going, well, that's so-and-so. I'm trying to be supportive. I'm trying to be helpful. And he thumbs his nose at me. It's a ricochet effect. It's a ricochet effect. All based on intent, action, and effect. It happens constantly in our interactions with each other. Our experience becomes our reality and our assumption about the other. When I'm working with people in conflict situations, it's not unusual for some person to react to the other on the basis of an assumption they've made about the intention over here. I'll call time. So, Ralph, what was your intention? I'll use Linda and Ralph for just a minute. So, Linda, what did you think was going on? Well, Ralph intended to put me down. Well, hold on. Let's check that out. Ralph, what was your intention? To put her down? Oh, okie dokie. What's the good news in that? Clarity. Exactly. Clarity. Because what inevitably has happened is what Ralph is doing is payback for what Linda did about 30 minutes ago that I missed. But at least we get to clarify it. I'm not suggesting any of this is happening in here. Wink, wink. So my encouragement is that you don't let these assumptions operate between and among you. They can take on lives of their own. They will create relationships that are very hard to change. They'll create history between and among you that will be very hard to change. My belief is there's already assumptions that have created history between and among you right now, based on assumptions you were making about what each other did in relation to the other 6 weeks ago. As a matter of fact, chances are you went home and you told your husband, your spouse, your roommate, the person across the street about it, which even concretized it more. So understand that these things will get in your way in your continuing intention to have the kinds of conversations you want to have with each other. Open-ended questions, curiosity, paraphrasing, an intention to truly listen to each other, an intention to truly influence each other, respectful communication, all those things that you've actually already agreed to, continue those in place. They will serve you. They will absolutely serve you. And don't let the fear of conflict get in the way of your stepping up and speaking. Don't let the fear of conflict get in your way. That will not serve you. Any other comments or questions at this point? Am I missing? Oh, yes.
I think that there's also the public intention and the private intention, and you may not really understand the private intention.
And if you ask Linda, why did you do that? And she said, you know, I thought he was going to put me down. And he said, no, I was going to be helpful. But actually, his private intention was to garner the credit for it. I think that you may not understand.
Correct.
Yourself or the other person.
Correct. Or you may not be willing to even disclose the private intention. It's the old hidden agenda, right? I'm sure that expression hasn't crossed anybody's lips in this room, has it? Hidden agenda. So let's talk about hidden agenda for just a minute. Why do we hide agenda? Fear. Fear, ultimately. That's why we hide agenda. Most of us haven't been brought up to hide agenda. It's not a natural inclination to hide agenda. I mean, ultimately, it's about fear. So if my hidden agenda is to get credit, it's probably because I'm fearful of telling anybody I want credit. So it becomes a hidden agenda. It's pretty much that simple and straightforward. So what you want to do is eliminate as much as possible. Support each other in diminishing fear in the room. It is not your friend. It is not your friend. Fear paralyzes and makes us do terrible, ugly, awful things. This is a huge task. I can understand it being intimidating for some more than others. It may be helpful for some of you actually to become a little more intimidated. But the truth is that I'm going to catch something for that later. The truth is, this is an overwhelming, huge task. Just don't let fear pervade what you're doing here. What is the fear? Failure, not accomplishing what it is you're here to accomplish. You know, I'm sure there some of you have fears that I probably couldn't even identify. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you try your best to help each other diminish that fear and anxiety as much as you can, because it simply won't serve you. It simply will not serve you. Never does, never has. Yes, Tense.
Fear to me too is, I just think of little children and the difference between maybe a child walking across a skinny sidewalk thing or whatever, and an adult. The adult is thinking, oh, I'm going to fall, that'll hurt, et cetera, et cetera. But the child just does it. The child just sees the path and walks on it. Yeah. Hasn't made up a whole bunch of stuff.
It's true. How many of you received the first few pages that I sent out by email? There was... Oh, gosh. Maybe I don't have it on this one. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. This would be a great thing to close with, actually. Thank you very much. So it would be a wonderful thing. I love closing with inspirational words, and I rarely have any of my own. So I'm going to pick this one. Security is mostly a superstition. It does not exist in nature, nor do children as a whole experience it. Avoiding danger is no safer in the long run than outright exposure. Life is either a daring adventure or nothing. To keep our faces toward change and behave like free spirits in the presence of fate is strength undefeatable. Helen Keller. Thank you all for inviting me here this morning. Pleasure. Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
We were a little bit short of Michael's documentation. I think it's 50, 60 pages or whatever. So if you don't have one, if you go to the help desk, get your name, and we'll send it to you, because the photocopier apparently has gone on the fritz. So, but we will mail it to you over the course of the next few days. Michael, you're every bit as good as your reputation. Thank you very, very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.